is silent in the calm. Hushed and empty is the womb of the sky.
Welcome, O curious and inquisitive Tenno, to the Cephalon Squared Lorecast. Be warned, serious spoilers will follow, so we'd recommend skipping if you are yet to complete the main storyline, currently ending with the sacrifice. Otherwise, on with the show.
Hello, listeners. Just a quick little reminder that this one is Lorecast and it is full of spoilers. We forgot to mention it during the episode itself because we were just too damned excited, but I'm going to throw it out here now. If you haven't played The Second Dream, stop listening right now, because this is full of spoilers that you should be playing in the game. Again, if you haven't played The Second Dream, stop listening right now. Spoiler warning. Otherwise, listen on. G'day, Cephalon Collective, and welcome to the fourth edition of Cephalon Squared Lorecast. This is, of course, a continuation of last week. Usually we wouldn't do two in a row, but we only got half The Second Dream out last week, and I think some of you would like to hear the rest of it. So, my name is Cephalon Greg. I'm joined by Cephalon Lucas. How you doing?
I'm good. So, you reckon only some people would like to hear the rest of it?
Yeah, just some.
Just some.
Okay, three maybe, two. Quite a few. Maybe everyone that listened to the first half. Because reality, the first half is not even the good half. So this is the exciting half. This is the money half. If you want to go there, we went there. Indeed. So how's the weather?
The weather. Well, okay. Currently in Brisbane, well, in Ipswich, at 7:05 PM, it is 27 degrees with a 48% humidity.
Holy moly. Well, in Melbourne, it's 33 degrees with only 31% humidity, so it doesn't feel that bad. And we're inside, air conditioner on, all that jazz, so it actually feels quite comfortable. Except for the 21 degrees overnight, it's going to be poopy.
I just got my windows open with the air flowing through.
Fair enough. That is nice. All right, so moving right along, a quick little bit of mini news. The first dev stream of the year will be held this Friday or Saturday, depending on what part of the world you're on. That is dev stream 122. I was not smart enough to have a look at their little synopsis before I jumped on, so I don't know what they're even talking about, but I'm looking forward to it. I'm hoping we hear about the release of Fortuna on Switch. And really, I don't know what else though we'll be talking about. Probably not much, just Happy New Year, and this is what we've done since the start of the year, I imagine.
Quite possibly. I was actually just trying to look to see if I could find the synopsis. Little synopsis for it, but I cannot seem to find anything. Yay.
It's because you're not good at looking for things.
Oh, shut up, Mum.
You did a boy look, not a girl look. That's what my sister says.
Yeah.
Sounds it's about true, right. Whatevs. Yeah, we don't care. All right, so let's just get into it because this is going to be a lengthy one. Okay, over to the rest of The Second Dream. So we recall from the last episode that the sentient destroyer of worlds, Hun Hao, has recruited the Stalker to hunt down the Tenno, and they're seeking out the reservoir, whatever you like to say, the source of the Tenno power and of their secrets. So at the end of the previous episode, it was discovered that the reservoir was hidden on the moon, which itself was hidden within the void since the end of the Old War. Now with the moon rediscovered, we continue our tale. So regaling that he can recall the last time he visited the moon, Ordus relays his concern to the Tenno. Apologizing, the Lotus then explains that it was the secrets of the reservoir that drove the Stalker mad, which was an interesting quote, and that she hid this from the Tenno to avoid the same fate. Soon after, it's discovered that Hun Hao and the Stalker plan to enter the void control room on the moon and set off a chain reaction that will result in its ultimate destruction, as well as that of the Tenno, of course. To avoid this, the Tenno head to the moon, but are too late, reaching the moon just as this chain reaction begins to take place. Now, keep in mind that this chain reaction is actually a collapse of the void, which allows the sentience to enter and attack, but it also ends with a total void collapse, which destroys the moon. In order to preserve the moon, the Lotus decides that the best thing to do is to remove it from the void and return it to its rightful place in Earth's orbit. And while all of this is happening, part of this requires the Tenno to assist by finding three compasses that steer the moon within the void, and this is required to reorient the moon in regular space. Hanhao makes an interesting observation. Now, I couldn't, again, get this quote, so I will read it out.
Nata, you trust this Orican blood who would chisel weapons from our bones?
Now, I decided to include that little quote because it is very interesting, considering what happens in the Chimera prologue. Plus, when he talks about trusting the Orican blood, he is, of course, referring to Alad V. Interesting. Anyway, soon after this, Alad V leaves in fear, advising that Hanhao has found him, and he reminds the Lotus to remember their deal. So see last episode, see Lucas's section talking about Alad V for more info on what that deal was. On finalizing the compass mission, the Lotus then sends the Tenno to find the pendula, which maintain the moon's stability and stop or destroy them. On destroying the four pendula, which is a difficult task in itself, the Tenno head to extraction as the moon is now restored. But all the while, they hear the ghostly voices of Balas and Margulis, the ancient Orican, Count England. So, Lucas, who do you want to be, Balas or Margulis?
Well, you did such a marvellous job at Lotus last week, so how about we keep that going for you?
Exactly, because I'm pretty sure Margulis is also voiced by Reb Ford, so it makes sense.
Okay, so I'm going to try do a Balas voice. Good you know luck. What? I'm not even going to try. I'm just going to read.
Do your best.
What they need, Margulis, is to be destroyed. They're devils. From that hell, not human anymore.
No, Balas. No more destruction. We could heal them. Maybe they're meant to save us.
How can you defend those devils, Margulis, after what they've done to you?
Love nooks not with the eyes, but with the mind. They won't hurt anyone. I just need more time.
Hush, my wilted love. I cannot protect you. Tomorrow you must renounce before the seven.
Beautiful. So I don't recall any laughing sections in there, Lucas. You're not.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, your acting skills, you know, you got to work on that a little bit. You got to hide the laughter. Plus, my Margulis was brilliant, let's face it. So, that last line, tomorrow you must renounce before the seven. Now, these are the seven... Shit, I've forgotten what they're called. Damn, I should have looked it up, but I thought, nah, I'll remember that, because Balas is one of them. They're essentially one of the seven elite of the Orican, and I'm going to kick myself for forgetting what they're called. But yes, so for what she's done in regards to the Tenno themselves, she must go in front of them and basically tell them what she's done. It's essentially a trial, and we will learn a little bit more about that in just seconds. So, with the moon now well and truly exposed in the Earth sky, the Tenno are sent on an urgent mission to stop the Stalker once and for all. On making their way through the Orican structure on the moon, the Tenno hears the voices again, telling more stories from the past. You ready, Lucas, Balas?
Bring it on.
So shame on you! You Orican, so perfect on the outside, but you're rotted, through and through!
Seven hands raised. For your apostasy, the judgment is death. Margulis, why? It's about the other rejects we consigned to Lua a few years ago. They're calling it transference. I know we are desperate. Executor. But these aren't Dax soldiers. These are golems possessed by devil minds.
I remembered what they are now that the word is right in front of me. They're called the Executors. So they're the seven Executors, and Ballas is one of the Executors. And the structure and hierarchy of the Orican isn't overly clear, but the executors are, I believe, at the very top. And then there's majors and other funny little things that are below that. Now, Margulis herself, I don't believe, was even Orican.
No.
She was just a human person, perhaps one of the higher caste, but still not not Orican herself, which is why she calls them so perfect and they're rotted through and through. Anyway, on reaching the reservoir, the Tenno are greeted by a glorious sight, a waterfall within an enclosed area emptying into a pool below. From within this pool rises a pod, shaped not unlike a lotus, but clearly mechanical. The pod opens, and a small, leather-clad being, a child, is deposited limply onto the floor, at which point the Tenno seems to lose control of the warframe. Now, I do have this quote, so I will play it for you, because you've probably heard it before. You've definitely heard it before.
Dream. Not of what you are, but of what you want to be.
Slowly, the small person wakes and drags themselves over to the warframe, touching it. This seems to reactivate the warframe, and, picking up the small child, the warframe begins to carry them to safety. The stalker, who was watching along all this time, hesitates to kill them. Hun Hao then calls him weak and sends his sentient fragments to destroy the Tenno and the child. Now, while carrying the child, the warframe is, of course, unable to use most of its abilities and weapons, but the child seems to have a power of its own, firing beams of light that can destroy the sentients. Escaping to the ship, the Lotus sends the Tenno to carry the child into the room at the back of the ship, which has been locked until this point, where there is an object she refers to as the somatic link. On entering this room, though, it's discovered that the Stalker has infiltrated the ship and is hell-bent on destroying the Tenno. Fighting with all his might, he fails to keep the child away from the somatic link, which is eventually restored to power by use of the child's energy beam. On fully powering up, a blast of energy sends the warframe, the child, and the Stalker sprawling. Separated, the child watches as the Stalker stands over the warframe and thrusts the greatsword War into its torso. Now, do you want to be Hun Hao or Lotus, Lucas?
I'll be Hun Hao.
Go on.
Okay.
It's your turn now.
No self, no sense, no death. Just a metal puppet dangling on Tenno strings. Only the Tenno's death will end your despair. All your dread, long life, you've waited for this moment. But you're asking yourself, was I one of these wretched things? You know the answer. You still hate them. You still hate yourself.
Okay, so in that case, he's talking to the Stalker. Now, it's interesting because from the lore doesn't really suggest that the Stalker is a Tenno. But these lines suggest otherwise. So it's interesting, and you know, we're going to have to do a little bit more digging, or we're probably going to have to wait until Stalker-focused cinematic quest comes back to learn who or what he actually is. But it's this point where we learn that up until this point in the game, most players would have thought that the warframe was the Tenno, but now we learn that it was just a puppet dangling on Tenno strings, and that the Tenno is this child who was controlling the metal puppet. So, with the warframe out of the way and the real Tenno now in its sights, the Stalker moves to destroy the Tenno child. Somehow, The Warframe reawakens, removes the sword, and breaks it in half. This act also breaks Hunhao's link to the Stalker, who howls in pain, drops the Tenno, and leaves in quite a hurry.
What is this? Shadow, protect me.
Now we fight on two fronts, my child. The war without, and the war within.
Did you like that?
It's great. Golden.
Thank you. Okay, so the Lotus herself then appears in the orbiter, picks up the child lovingly, and carries it carefully to its seat in the somatic link. Now, at this point, I will leave the second dream. All of you who have already hopefully played the second dream, and shit, we didn't do a spoiler warning at the start of the episode. I might record one and throw it in there, because that's pretty important. So all of you who have played the second dream, hopefully, will know that that's not actually the end, but the rest of the second dream, when you're actually doing the character selection screen after 50 or 100 hours in the game, tells the story of the Tenno. So I figured it's probably best to leave that to the next lore cast, and we haven't really left anything hanging in the air. So we'll do that in 2 or 3 weeks' time, whenever the next one is, at the same time as episode 30. But what did we learn from this? We learned that...
Shitload, really.
Yeah, exactly. So we learned that the Lotus had hidden the Tenno children, because it's not just us. We're not the only Tenno. She had hidden the Tenno children in these cryopods underneath the water on the moon and allowed them to control Warframes to fight her battles.
In the void.
Transference, yeah.
take that step further.
Yeah, in the water, in the void, no.
In
a cryopod.
In a pod on the moon, under the water.
On the moon. In the void. And she said she did that to protect the children, which she probably did. She also didn't want to wake them at this point. You know, the children were really awakened because the Grineer were coming after all of the Tenno Warframes. And now, because Hunhao discovered where they were and wanted to finish what was started in the old war, she decided that it was time to wake the Tenno and let the Tenno find out a little bit more about who they are. But as we all know, we haven't found out everything yet. So
indeed so.
That was the second dream. So the second dream itself refers to them being essentially asleep in that. Actually refers to transference. So there is a quote that I didn't put in here, where Lotus talks about transference, and she calls transference the second dream. So interesting, but the second dream is essentially when they're sort of asleep in the cryopods and controlling the Warframes. So, Lucas, Mr. Hunhao and Ballas himself... Over to you, good sir. Today you are talking about...
Tile Rigor. So I'm taking a little bit of a step back and looking into Tile Rigor. So essentially, Tile Rigor is the lead scientist for the Grineer, focusing on genetic engineering in an attempt to cure the Grineer of the diseased flesh that has come from overcloning their own DNA. He's also the final boss battle on Uranus. The Lotus recognizes Tile as a threat and targeted the Grineer scientist in an attempt to prevent the Grineer from becoming more powerful through his genetic research. Now, looking back at some of the origins to him, we jump into Operation Tube Men of Rhaegor. The disease the Grineer suffer from is called cloning decay syndrome, which is caused when cloned DNA is cloned again. Essentially, the more you clone a clone, the further the specimens deteriorate. Because of the importance of Tile's research, he decided to build underwater labs hidden away below the surfaces of Uranus. The first sign of progress that was the creation of the Tubemen, a stronger, healthier Grineer specimen, and they were very powerful. This research caught the attention of Alad V, who was at this time looking for a way to cure himself of the infestation. This chain of events does not bode well with Tile, as Alad V decides to enlist the Tenno to steal the research and destroy the Tubemen to halt the Grineer's progress. But Alad V was not the only one seeking to destroy the Grineer's chance at revitalization. Nefanyo of the Corpus Board also approached the Tenno with a counter-offer to instead leave Alad to suffer. In the end, Alad got his wishes, and Tile Regor, along with the entire Grineer race, suffered the price as the Tubemen research was now gone. Stolen Dreams. It was Tile Regor that originally hired Maru to find and retrieve the arcane codices from the derelict, as he believed them to have the key to the cure of their deteriorating genes. However, as Maru has very little opinion of the Grineer, she decided it best to sell them some fakes and the real ones to the Corpus. When it was discovered that Maru had pulled a fast one over, Tile was quite enraged and in turn ordered his men to track and kill Maru. Unfortunately for him at this stage, Maru had already gone under the protection of the Tenno. So, didn't get his chance to kill her off, and she's still roaming around quite safe. The next time we encounter Tile Regor is during Natar. And sometime after the events of the Stolen Dreams, Tile Regor discovers the tomb to an artificial species created by the Orokin. This discovery prompted hauntings in the sea labs of ghost-like spectral entities that had a gentle blue glow about them, the Oculists. Through intercepting some communications between the Grineer, the Tenno came to learn that Tile Regor planned on excavating this tomb in hopes of finding ancient artifacts and technologies that would help in the Mad Doctor's research. This caused the Tenno to spring into immediate action. Through these missions, it is made clear that the Grineer are not as well versed in the history of the origin system as the Corps are, due to Tile Regor himself mentioning his interest in how it was that the Sentience managed to topple the Orokin, a god-like civilization. Though aware of what threats may be awoken, Tile decides to push forward in the excavation, uncovering primordial technologies, including the Auxilius Adapter. Then it all came to a halt as an entity unknown to the Grineer made its presence known, Hunhao. It was at this point that the entity revealed itself to be of a parental figure to the Lotus, and Tile Regor, made a little uneasy by this new entity, ordered a full retreat of his forces from the sentient tomb, allowing the Tenno to proceed with sealing the tomb with the entity still inside. Angered by the Tenno interfering for the last time, this is when Tile Regor issues a challenge to the Tenno for a face-to-face battle, which later takes place on the final node of Uranus. Now, after that battle, it's not known whether or not Tile Regor is dead and gone completely, but if he still lives, how long will it take for him to finally heal the Grineer race back to its full health?
How long indeed?
Mm. Yes, how long?
Very good. So, I mean, there was a couple of points there that we have already covered in our, not already covered, but are supplementary to things we've already covered in the Lorecast. So, Stolen Dreams, for example, we talked about Maru and how she was running from the Grineer, and the reason she actually stayed with us was because we were protecting her from the Grineer, and that was from young Tile Regor.
Yeah. One thing I found most interesting out of all my research for this was the fact that it is specifically mentioned that Hunhao is an entity that is completely unknown to the Grineer.
Yes. Yeah. Interesting. Well,
whereas then you look at the Corpus, and good example being Alad V, when Alad V discovers Hunhao in the second dream, he makes mention of this. He's like, oh shit, it's Hunhao. But,
interesting.
Yeah, according to the Grineer, they have absolutely no knowledge of who Hunhao is. They don't even realize that it wasn't exactly the sentience that toppled the Orokin.
Yeah, that is interesting, because, yeah, that is very interesting. It probably means, I would imagine, that the queens are keeping them dumb.
Quite possibly.
I mean, we know that they are keeping them dumb, because that's part of the, that's part of the lore behind the Grineer themselves as a race. But still, some of them get to the top, you know, and they're far more learned than the rest of them, like, Vahek and what's his name?
And Captain Vor, Tyler Rigor.
Yeah, so these guys still get to the top, but they still don't know the truth about things. So that's really interesting.
Yeah.
Really interesting, especially considering who the queens are.
Yes, indeed.
Okay. Cool stuff. I like cool stuff. Cool stuff's cool. All right. So hopefully you learned a lot, or you learned something from this particular episode. You now know that you are a space child.
Space child.
However you feel about that. let's have a 2-second chat, Lucas, about your immediate reaction when you learned you were a space child.
Far out immediate reaction.
Do you remember how you felt? I kind of do.
I mean, I saw something like this coming, because the whole being able to jump from frame to frame never really sat right. So I figured it was kind of like a proxy system. But to actually have it revealed that it was something like Avatar, the blue people. not the airbender, the blue people. That was actually quite a nice little touch.
Yeah, by the time I started playing Warframe, this particular storyline had been out and about for a long time, so I had a pretty good inkling of what was going on. But just the story, the way it was told, the music, especially the use of This Is What You Are, the song called This Is What You Are, in the second dream especially, is very different to the other usage of that particular song. And it's really highly emotional. It's really well done.
That's an understatement. That is an understatement. I'm going to admit it on audio here for everyone that the second dream actually drove me to tears.
Aww.
Did you have someone to hug? No. It was an absolute beautiful masterpiece of a story that was very well told.
Indeed it was. I can't say that it drove me to tears, but it did. I did feel feelings, which is unlike me.
You heard it here,
it was
folks.
Interesting.
The cold-hearted Cephalon Greg has feelings.
Sometimes. Very rarely. Those feelings surface. Anyway, so that was the second dream. The next quest we'll be tackling, of course, will be The War Within, which is, of course, obviously the continuation of this main storyline in the game. And it is also equally brilliant. For my money, I prefer The War Within, just because I like some of the activities that you do within it. But I think the story of the second dream maybe is a little bit better. Hard to say, but we can have that discussion after we talk next week.
Indeed so. My guess is the next one's going to be a two-parter as well.
Yeah, it probably is. Let's face it.
Yeah.
But that's all right. Oh, well, actually, it depends. The next one might be the story of the Tenno and who they are and where they came from and how they became Tenno, or it might be The War Within. I will put a poll up on both Discord and on Facebook, and I'll let the people choose.
Let the people decide.
Let the people choose. All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. This was Loreframe Episode 4, the final section of The Second Dream, and Lucas covered Tyle Rigor. Last week, we also covered Alad V. Thanks for listening. My name is Greg Newbegin. I am Mad Capsules pretty much everywhere. How about you, Mr. Sir?
I am Lucas Silvestri. I am Silverlight pretty much everywhere. SilverLght. Thank you again for listening. Yeah, we do put a lot of work into it, and it's always great to see the community appreciating our work.
Indeed it is. Indeed it is. And if you want more, go to cephalonsquared.com. You can join all of the different things that we have going. Discord, Facebook, all of that jazz, all of the fun stuff. Join. Be part of the community because it's really good. We've actually built a fantastic community around this particular podcast, and we are very thankful for everyone that's part of it. So again, thanks for listening. Thanks to Jan at Disco_Box for the intro and outro, and thanks to you. We'll see you soon.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Cephalon Squared. If you'd like to contact us, send an email to cephalonsquared@gmail.com or get in touch via Twitter or Facebook. You can also join our Discord or send us a voice message via the Anchor app. See you next week.